with life, we get curveballs and you have to figure out what to do with it. So for me, a lot of curveballs like hit me in the head one time.
Welcome back to The Tour, a podcast filled with intimate conversations with musicians you know and others you should. I'm your host, Ted Canova. Lauren Jenkins first caught my attention on the Bowery Ballroom stage, warming up for Delta Ray.
No world's looking over that shop before a four-leaf clover. Are we ever gonna find it?
Her voice stops you. Her stories touch you.
I keep running out of road.
And the combination makes you feel like you've known her your whole life. Touring since she was 15, Lauren has been a wanderer most of her life. And on her road, she's become an actress, filmmaker, guest host on E Street Radio, and even game to appear on my other music podcast, That One Lyric, where I challenged her to choose a Springsteen lyric that holds special meaning.
It was a small town bank.
It was a small town bank. It was a mess.
It was a mess.
Well, I had a gun. You know the rest.
Well, I had a gun.
Oh.
You know the rest.
Lauren has seen career curveballs, and like any good batter, she's made adjustments. Now on her own terms as an independent artist, Lauren has just released a new EP called Miles on Me Part 1, the first of three EPs to satisfy our appetite for new music. She calls this the most favorite thing she's ever been a part of, from My Own Advice.
You stay when you should run, and you still can't say goodbye. I don't know why, I can't take my own advice.
To Miles on Me.
Let you break down my walls. Thing about walls is they keep you safe.
She's a star.
But can she hold you like I do? Does she have your heart?
And Like You Found Me. I talked with Lauren on the eve of her EP release, homebound, as she's been for 15 months, with her faithful companion Cooper adding his voice along the way.
Lauren, thanks for joining me on the tour. How are you today?
Hi, I'm great. I'm still on tour in my living room, so thanks for bringing me to yours.
Well, thank you. The intimacy of these interactions in the last year has really brought you closer to fans in a way that perhaps live performances can't.
Coop, you know the back door is open, right? You can just run outside anytime you want.
Since COVID, where I've been home, I've literally been able to check in with people that some of them I remember from shows, some of them I haven't even met or and haven't been to a show, but I've been able to check in with them for over a year and find out how their chemo treatment is going and hear about the piano that they bought and they're trying to learn piano lessons. It's been a really beautiful moment in such an uncertain year.
Hello, everyone.
One of the things that's kept me going.
So I had a show last night
to talk to people.
Like a drive-in show at a hot dog stand. It was weird, but it was also kind of great.
And find out how music has helped them.
When I'm writing for myself, it's usually my own experience. Kira says, hi, Coop.
I don't know, just feeling more connected to good humans and strangers. I've experienced a lot of kindness over the course of the year from fans.
Hey, hey, payday, Friday show. What's up, Albo? I had everything set up.
Once touring does happen, it's going to be pretty emotional because some of these names and faces, I know their Instagram name and I know about their life now. And it's not that I never wanted to before, but because things slowed down at such a rate to where I could actually open my email or my DMs and personally respond. That's something that I really tried to keep up with over the last year. And, you know, I think that fans have gotten closer to each other, even though some of them are complete strangers. They now write to each other and have planned where their first concert is going to be. And they've never met in real life, but they've connected over live streams. I mean, it's really bizarre. And it's sort of like having a random pen pal that you would write letters to back in the day over the course of a year and then eventually get to go to a show together. I mean, it's sort of like that, except for a lot faster of a pace.
I know a lot of singer-songwriters isolate to write, get into their thoughts. So has the quarantine been harder on you, or have the live streams been enough?
It's both. I'm grateful mostly because of the kindness of other people. I've been able to keep my lights on by having live streams. And it's something by no way comes close to replacing the thing that I love to do. To me, there's still an element that feels a little foreign and not 100% present or there. That's just the nature of things being online. At the same time, I'm still grateful for something. But yeah, the last year has been really tough. And I don't think for me mentally and emotionally, it's a sustainable thing for forever. I would go insane. but I haven't had to learn how to like sew and make clothes or become an accountant or something, things that I don't know how to do. You know, I've been able to continue to pursue the thing that I love. But yeah, it's been tough.
Well, thank you, Heidi, for staying up late to hang out with me for a bit.
Did it stifle, not creativity, but your growth? Did it get in the way of the writing?
As a writer, I always kind of ebb and flow in phases. I think there's no way to tell what was lost or what could have happened with this past year had things continued on the route that they were in back in January, February of 2020. I'll never know. It's an interesting question to think about. But at the same time, with life, we get curveballs and you have to figure out what to do with it. So for me, a lot of curveballs like hit me in the head all at one time. So I said, okay, well, I've got these songs that I want to record, and they were brand new and fresh and they had kind of poured out of me. And so we began the recording process independently. So I've had the luxury of being home and working on this record for the last year. It'll be the first record that I 100% had creative control over, which, if I was touring and home only 10 days out of the year, would that still happen? Maybe. Maybe it would be different. But I've really enjoyed that process in this time. And I think that's one of the beautiful things that has come out of this inevitable, we're stuck. Things are going different than you planned.
You know, I wanted to dive into the early years of your career, but since you mentioned curveball, why don't we stick with curveball and keep it in the present? You had a really incredible couple of days a couple of years ago. Why don't you kind of paint a picture for us?
So 2020, January, February, I was overseas with Brett Eldridge, sold out venues. In the several first rows were people that I recognized because they had been coming to my solo tours and my other tours for the past year and a half. So it's awesome to be able to know, okay, I put a bunch of butts in seats. This is great. So I was on a high from that tour, had a full schedule lined up for 2020, really heavy touring, all of the festivals, had some shows with some of my favorite artists lined up, and was pre-production planning the second record. So I am like, this is gonna be great. And then I did one show in Florida opening for REO Speedwagon, and I got back, and then a tornado hit Nashville.
At least two tornadoes touched down. We're learning that at least seven people are now confirmed dead in the metro area.
And then within the week, my manager received a phone call from the label that I was with at the time that they would no longer be working with me. It was just kind of like a little bit in shock. So the next day I went into the studio, still kind of in shock. And I was like, well, we're recording immediately. Here we go. And so with my band, I recorded Ain't That Hard, and we released it within a month or less.
Main Street bars and football teams.
But then, you know, all the shows started pausing. my manager was let go from the management company and my agent was let go from the agency. And so sort of like my big advocates, my world around me started crumbling. And it was sort of like, wait, but everything was great. What is it? I'm so, stop. It was just a really tough time for a lot of people in the industry, including myself. I was never getting an income from the label. 90%, 95 maybe, of my income came from touring. So I had that moment of, oh gosh, you mean they've canceled shows up to August? Because at first it was like, well, your June show is still on the book. Never mind. Maybe August. Maybe you'll be back to Europe, because we had a fall Europe tour planned. Eventually, I would get calls every week like, no, that festival got canceled. Just nothing's happening. And it didn't for a year. And here we are.
Oh my gosh. You know, one of those events by itself is life altering, right? A tornado getting dropped and then the pandemic. And you had all three of them. I think they all happened within 10 days of each other, from March 3rd, 2020 to March 13th, 2020.
Yeah. I think it started with my car. My sister had left my sunroof open while we were in Europe and my car was flooded. So I returned from Europe to basically a kiddie pool worth of water because it had snowed and rained for the month and a half that I was gone. And I was like, oh God.
It's a fish tank, your car.
Yeah, my car had turned into a fish tank. And that was the beginning of the week. And then the tornado and then the label drop and then manager, agent, all the shows gone. It was a lot.
You mentioned your sister. I had read that when you went to Europe, did you share a twin bed? Tell me about that.
Well, my label, so a new head person had come in who was not real keen on giving tour support, or maybe just not supporting me so much. So I had asked for tour support for that tour because I wasn't bringing a band. And I was like, look, I'm doing this as cheap as possible. We're going to stay with some of my friends some of the time and sleep on the floor. And I'm not even hiring a tour manager or a merch person. I'm bringing my sister and I'm going to pay for her food. And that's it. They wouldn't give me any money. So I knew touring in Europe and the UK, it's expensive. Even just bringing merch over, it's pretty pricey, including plane ticket. Luckily, my sister, she's a very laid back earthy girl. Like, I'm not sure if she wears deodorant. I don't think she really does. So when I told her, I was like, hey, when we're in Zurich, we're going to be sleeping on the floor at my friend Tim's house for like four nights. Okay. She's like, all right, great. And, you know, some of the other times I was like, we've got a hostel. There's one bed. So remember when you were a baby and you would just kind of sleep right here? We're doing that again, except we're grown adults now.
So life as a singer-songwriter on the road. How glamorous.
Oh, it's amazing, man. Yeah, it's great. Just beef jerky for lunch if you're lucky.
Oh my gosh. All right. Let's talk about your new single that you just mentioned. Ain't That Hard.
There's power lines and two lane roads.
It's your first song as a fully independent artist. Does it feel different? Is it invigorating or just free?
I think there's a lot of freedom that's been felt in the making of this record and releasing the first single, Ain't That Hard, and then Like You Found Me. Freedom and just sort of taking a deep breath, sigh of relief, is sort of the main things that I've felt from this. But I feel like I have more ownership than I did before. I love my debut record, and a lot of emotion and energy and thought went into the making of it, but it was a little bit of a battle. And some of the battles with that record, I didn't always win. So for this record, it doesn't really matter to me whether or not it gets a whole lot of critical acclaim or whether people like it, because at the end of the day, I'm putting out something that I really love and that's got my fingerprint on it 100%.
Let me ask you specifically about Ain't That Hard, which came out in May of 2020. You had said that you wrote it to remind yourself that you're not as special as I sometimes think I am.
Yeah.
So you ain't as special as you think you are. It ain't that hard to break a heart.
Which at the time, woe is me, all my shows, how do I pay bills? Oh, guess what? There's people all around the world dealing with the same thing you're dealing with. It's not meant to be a nasty song or sentiment, but I think it's sometimes a good reminder as the narrator is speaking directly to someone, you're not as special as you think you are. it's just as much a reminder to myself. As humans, any situation that we're going through or that we're facing, there's about a 99.9% chance somebody out there has been through the same thing or feels the same way or has had the same thing happen to them. And I think there's a comfort in knowing that. It makes it a little easier sometimes to deal with it, and especially during this pandemic year, I had to remind myself of that all the time.
Well, there's something interesting in Ain't That Hard, because you came up with so many phrases, an ordinariness of a town.
With ice cream trucks and kids at play, tag out in the yard, tell mama, calls a midnight dark.
Was that to set the stage that this town isn't special, but in a way it is special?
Yes and no. This was a song that I had been thinking about for years. I don't even remember what town I was in. I could probably go through my journal and look, but I was standing outside a venue one night and I had never been to this town before, but I felt like I had. And there's something about that that is so the same as every other town, but obviously there's something special too because you feel like you've been there before. You know these people, you know that Main Street. And so I wanted to figure out a way to articulate that. Like, I love New York and it is a special place and it's got its own thing. But in a lot of ways, you walk down the streets. And honestly, even when I lived off of 43rd and 9th, there's a little block on 43rd and 9th that is no different than East Nashville. It's got the fruit stands and the liquor store. It's not that different. And these stories and these things that are happening in small town America, they're happening in Germany too. To me, I wanted to paint that picture and have one place be the setting, but you kind of realize like, oh, that could apply across the coast and across countries for the most part.
Well, and it lets the listener fill in the blanks of maybe not where they're living today, but, you know, like my hometown, so to speak, with Springsteen, right? That I've been there, even if I don't live there today.
Mm-hmm.
Like You Found Me is a new release. It is just sensational, Lauren. I love it.
Thank you.
Tell me more about how you came up with that.
A lot of therapy, truly. A lot of therapy. I think this is not a song that I could have written a couple of years ago. Therapy is a great thing. Huge advocate for it. You know, I started thinking about how relationships come to be back in the before times of people hitting on strangers in bars and trying to figure out the angle. I've witnessed it and I've had it happen to me. And it's very rare that you have encounters where you have two people that are fine and don't need anything from each other, whether that's a romantic encounter or even just as friendship, where two people are really solid and okay on their own. But when those relationships do happen, that's when the best friendships happen and romantic relationships or even business relationships. And I think, again, this whole year has been really trying to be intentional about leaving things better than you found it, or at least in the same condition, whether that's a relationship or a place or
a country.
Yeah, it's very easy to not live with that intention. And I've seen it traveling, and I just think we'd be a whole lot better if we treated each other and the places that we go and the situations that we walk into if we had that sentiment. So that's where the song came from.
Thank you for sharing that. Let's back up just a couple of years ago. You had a critically acclaimed debut album, No Saint.
You say I'm an angel, and angels don't get low. Baby, you broke my wings oh so long ago.
For a while, I didn't think it would see the light of day. The fact that it lives and breathes is a huge accomplishment for me. It came to fruition the way that I envisioned it, which is always my goal when it comes to music and storytelling.
And you wash your hands in holy water, swear all your sins were gone. If there's a cure,
says I need to forgive you, but I ain't no saint. I was not expecting some of the response that I got from it because there wasn't a huge PR push behind it. It didn't get radio play. Rolling Stone referred to it as a sleeper masterpiece. And I was like, that's a great, I'll take it. That's a great compliment. And, you know, I got that New York Times piece, a bunch of support from critics organically, and it never got a push. It didn't get radio. And so it just kind of lives in this space. I think that also sort of speaks to the business relationship at the time with the label. Could it have been bigger? I absolutely believe so. But at the same time, I, as an artist, am happy that it exists. That was my main get-go. And I'm happy that I won most of the battles and arguments that I had about it. And there were some that I didn't win, but you just try to work with people where you don't have to battle it out. If there's a cure for being pure
again, can't find it anywhere. You must have always had confidence that you were going to release an album over the years, no?
No. The way that No Saints started to speed up is I was not getting any kind of response from the label at the time. So I was like, well, fuck it. I'm just going to go to North Carolina and I'll make an album. So I went to North Carolina and I recorded No Saint, which I knew I wanted to be the title track. And I recorded Maker's Mark and You and Running Out of Road and Payday and another song that did not get approval to be on the record. I record these songs and I turn it into the label and I said, here, I want to put this out. I'm making a record. And then they said, okay, we can go into the studio. You can record these six songs and then we're going to package the other four songs that are just demos. They're not actual recordings. They're work tape demos from the day that I wrote the song. We're just going to throw those on there. That's what the album is. Again, like, I am so proud of that record because of those demo recordings. You get to sort of hear the progression of Lauren first coming to Nashville. There's like a song from the first year that I was here in Nashville on there and that recording, and then sort of present day Lauren having some control over the direction of the sound and the musicality of the song. And it's a pretty wide gap in my mind. Yeah, you think so too?
Hi, Cooper. I'm interested in that gap because I watched a video of you from 2010 when you performed on a local TV station and you performed Born to Be.
Welcome back to News Channel 3 on this Wednesday morning, live at 9. Well, our next guest just taught herself to play the guitar a couple years ago and started writing songs.
And she does it well. Now, she already has plans to move to Nashville, Tennessee to pursue her love of music. Here is Lauren Jenkins with the song Born to Be.
When you look back at a video of 11 years ago, who do you see?
I haven't looked back, I'm afraid to.
I won't tell you what you want to hear. I refuse to give in. What you think and what I need are different things.
I think I was an old soul. I was definitely beyond my years in a lot of ways, but even when I got to Nashville really full time in the end of 2013, 2014, I did not know a lot. I'm sort of light years away from that woman or that, I mean, she's kind of a girl.
When you say you didn't know a lot about writing, voice techniques, obviously the business.
I think all of it. I think it's life, you know? I think unless you have a really great mentor that's going to kind of help you figure out how to swim in the ocean, you're going to sink sometimes and you're not really going to know which way the shore is. And that's sort of what I did. And I learned how to swim, but it took a while for that confidence and for that wisdom of knowing where the shore is and knowing where the riptides are.
Well, what about the sharks? Because going to Nashville,
oh, there's lots of those.
Right?
I learned about those too.
Did you go in totally unprepared to Nashville?
Totally.
Do you need almost a primer? If you're coming to Nashville to be a musician, this is what you need to know.
I get asked that a lot of times, especially with advice for aspiring artists. The business side can be pretty challenging and sometimes ugly. And sometimes you get really lucky and you find the good ones to work with, and it's a beautiful thing. And for a while there, I think I had seen some of the ugly side. So I was like nobody help. I'll just do it on my own. And now luckily I've got some people that I work with and there's a sense of community that's really beautiful. But yeah, I think when it comes to music and the business of music, nobody should go down this path unless there's nothing else they want to do. If there's anything else that you think you might be interested in, training dogs not to bark at the UPS guy, like do that. You know, it's tough because with being a creative and a creator, there it is called the music business. So you have that flip side. And so you're putting your art and your creation and your ego and your confidence at times and your private stories, and you're turning it into a business and a commodity to be judged or torn apart or not valued or trashed or stolen. And it happens often. So to be able to weather that, I think you really have to have nothing else that you want to do. And for me, that's what it is. It's not really an option. Besides being a storyteller, there's nothing else that I've wanted to pursue.
Are you saying that you should have nothing else because then you could actually have desperation to make your music career happen?
I just don't think it's worth it dealing with the inevitable BS and heartbreak that comes to all of us. And sometimes it's the only thing that comes. I don't think that it's worth it to put yourself through that unless this is really, really what you want to do. And if it is, then you can fight through it and often come out the other side and be okay.
You and I both appreciate the music and the person of Brandi Carlile. As a woman singer-songwriter in country, what it's like that radio stations for years or maybe even today don't play women artists the way they play male artists. Do you find mentorship in people like Brandi and other female artists that you turn to?
I think the more Brandi Carlisles we can have in the world, the better. I get excited when I see somebody that fights to try to do more good than harm and help people and advocacy and at the end of the day, make great music. And she is a brilliant storyteller. So I think I always am looking for female voices, and it has nothing to do with, well, I don't like male artists. Bruce Springsteen is one of my all-time top three, most days he's favorite artists, but it really has to do with hearing stories from the perspective of women, which is why I've covered some Bruce songs, is because I think that it's important for us as humans to hear lots of different voices and lots of different perspectives, especially for our kids and the younger generation to have that representation.
Tell me now, baby, is it good to you? Can it do to you the things that I do? I could take you high.
I don't get specific mentoring, but man, I would love to sit down and have a conversation with Brandi Carlile. I think it would be highly fascinating and stimulating.
You talk about Bruce, and I've heard you on E Street Radio be the guest DJ. The songs you pick, no one else picks.
That's so surprising.
I mean, Reno?
They told me I was the only person that picked that song, and I was shocked. Like, how has nobody else picked this? It's amazing.
She took off her stockings, held it in my face.
Isn't it funny? It's the last song somebody would pick. And for you, it's like, are you crazy? I mean, why isn't everybody picking this? You
know? It's like, let's start with it. Here we go.
Well, which of the songs that you've covered, Bruce, do you like the best? You've done Stolen Car, I'm on Fire, Hungry Heart. I mean, Stolen Car, I'll let the song speak for itself.
In the end, it was something more, I guess.
Appreciate that. And I think I agree with you on that one. I think Stolen Car is my favorite that I've recorded.
I'm driving a stolen car down on Eldridge Avenue. Each night I wait to get caught, but I never.
There's another one in the works, so we'll see. But
really?
Yes. Not going to tell you more than that, though.
As a fan, Lauren, I really don't even want to know what it is. I don't need to break the scoop here. I want to be surprised.
Perfect. You will be. Stolen Car, it was a very special recording that it was very intentional. And actually, I was looking back, I have some video of when I recorded the vocals, and I'm just standing in this like closet, and there's a candle, and that's the only light in the room. And I did a take where I was like on the verge of like breaking down, and we used some of that in the final version where the voice is kind of like catching a little bit, and you can kind of see my face afterwards, and I'm like, is that too much? And because I'm about to just I'm about to just weep because it's the tension in the song and in the story. I don't play it live often because there's something very, very intimate about it. I play Hungry Heart way more often than I play Stolen Car, but in terms of recording wise, that's my favorite cover that I've recorded.
I think the next time you go to Bowery Ballroom, I think Stolen Car, you would hear a pin drop.
Oof. Need to bring a cellist with me or pedal steel.
You talked about a candle. You have a music video where there must be a dozen candles, and I swear there was one that got pretty close to your skirt.
And I look for you.
Maps, a very, very old song going way back. I must have been 15 or so when I wrote it, maybe 16. I can't remember if I had my license. The video came later because before it just lived as a song on my guitar. I didn't know about demoing songs with producers in Nashville yet. That was to come a few years later. But once I had that recording, I'm really into breaking into abandoned buildings. And there was this fantastic military academy that was abandoned, and it was all these old buildings. The kids hadn't figured out that it existed yet, so there was no graffiti, but it was just dust and pianos falling over and pews. So we broke in at like midnight with my friends to make this video and gotten all these wine bottles from a liquor store and made these candles. I just really wanted this dark space that was only lit by candlelight. There's no electricity. I think it was my first music video that I had self-directed and then edited. And I just put it out because I wanted to make it. I wasn't to like become a YouTube star or to get attention or anything. It was just like, I got a video idea. This sounds fun. And then flash forward years later, we used the same location for the Give Up the Ghost music video, but it looks totally different because as time happened, kids graffitied, and also it's just way more dangerous now as it's fallen into ruins. But we use the same location for the Give Up the Ghost video, and again, same thing. I didn't ask for permission from the label. Now that I was signed, I was just called my friend and I was like, I want to go to this abandoned location that I shot a music video in when I was 15. Ready, go.
I think you need to name one of your upcoming songs, Abandoned Buildings or something.
Yeah. I mean, you can get arrested for trespassing, but luckily, knock on wood, that hasn't happened yet.
Say, Lauren, where do you think you'll be in 10 years? Number one, what will you be writing about? And number two, how will you have changed?
I hope that in 10 years, it's been 10 years filled with shows and meeting people and stories and honest storytelling. I hope that in 10 years that I can figure out how to write about the things that I'm not sure how to write about right now and do it in a very honest and effectual way. I hope that I don't have to do live streams to keep my electricity on. I do hope that too. Or to pay for records. That would be great.
Have you identified the things you don't know how to write about today that you hope to in 10 years?
No, I know some of the things. Maybe that comes with age, or maybe that comes with experience, or maybe that comes with getting to the place to where you're ready to write about. And I think that may be the biggest key. I think there are some songs that exist now, and even some songs that I've released, where it took a while to be ready to write what I needed to write. I guess that's just a personal thing with how I work. But there are some things right now that I'm not ready to write about yet. So I hope it doesn't take 10 years to get ready, is what I'm saying.
Lauren, you are one of my favorites. I'm so glad that we got to spend some time together. And I really appreciate you opening up and being so honest, Yay. Answering your questions.
Time is short. We got to spend it with good people and being honest.
Well, thanks, Lauren. We'll see you on tour soon. Thank you.
Yes.
You could tell Lauren is forever grateful to her fans, especially now as an independent artist, where she acknowledges that each time you listen to her music, You're putting gas in her tank and making her dreams possible. Lauren and I shared a totally different conversation in my other music podcast, That One Lyric. Take a listen on your favorite podcast channel, or better yet, watch a special video version of our conversation at thatonelyric.com. Here at the tour, go back and listen to other inspiring conversations I've had with musicians you know and others you should. It's all at thetourpodcast.com. I'm your host, Ted Canova. Remember, music makes it all better. See you next time.
Road with you, I should have left love in my